Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Thursday, March 28, 2024. I'm your reader, Grace Barter. More than 300 employees at John Deere's Waterloo operations will lose their jobs in late April, the company confirmed Tuesday. A John Deere spokesman said 308 production workers will be laid off indefinitely April 29th. Employees reportedly learned of the layoffs in meetings with factory leaders Tuesday. Each John Deere factory balances the size of its production workforce with the needs of the individual factory to optimize the workforce at each facility. John Deere Waterloo operations currently have about 5,500 total employees, with about 3,600 of them working in production and maintenance jobs. Numbers posted to the Iowa Workforce Development, WARN, Worker Adjustment and Retaining Act, website also indicated 308 workers will be idled. The announcement comes 2 weeks after the company announced it will lay off 150 workers at its Ankeny location. According to recent Deere earnings reports, the company made $10.1 billion in fiscal year 2023 and is projecting earnings of $7.5 to $7.75 billion for fiscal year 2024. In February, the company reported net income of $1.751 billion for the first quarter of 2024, which ended January 28th, or $6.23 per share. That was down from the same time period last year when the company reported a net income of $1.959 billion or $6.55 per share. The company announced February 28th that the largest, most powerful tractor it has ever made is expected to roll off the assembly lines in Waterloo in mid-2024. The new 9RX tractor is a flexible, swivel-joint, articulated tractor with four huge treads or tracks. The tractor can be fitted with 830, 770, or 710 horsepower engines. Authorities have identified the man shot and killed by police following a report of gunfire Monday afternoon. The Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation identified the deceased as John Piazza, 41, who allegedly pointed a gun at officers at his home at 1204 Hartman Avenue. The officer involved in the shooting has been placed on critical incident leave pending the investigation, according to Waterloo Police. Waterloo Police confirmed they were called to a report of gunfire at an auto shop at 2701 Falls Avenue around 2:47 p.m. Employees reported that a man who lived nearby, later identified as Piazza, put a gun to an employee's face and fired a shot inside the business. No one at the shop was injured, and workers stated Piazza told them he would return with a rifle. Employees reported he was wearing jeans and a t-shirt, had a long beard, and was bald. Waterloo officers noticed a man fitting the description near the windows of the home with a long gun. A Waterloo police officer observed Piazza point a long gun out of a window towards officers. The officer fired at Piazza, striking him. Officers entered the residence and found Piazza deceased. Neighbors said they were told to stay in their homes. Officers from Waterloo, the Blackhawk County Sheriff's Office, and the Iowa State Patrol, most carrying military-style rifles, were on the scene with a section of Falls Avenue shut down so an ambulance could wait nearby. The Waterloo Police Department's Bearcat armored vehicle was parked on the lawn of the Hartman Avenue home, and a ground floor window next to the vehicle was broken out. Other neighbors said they heard someone at the Hartman Avenue house screaming earlier in the morning, around 3:30 a.m. Monday. They didn't think anything of it until Monday afternoon when they heard gunshots and saw police. More than 30 area businesses and other organizations are voicing support for the merger of East and West high schools. The business partners that make up the Career and Technical Education Advisory Group for the Waterloo Career Center presented a letter of support for the proposed project to the Board of Education on Monday. A Waterloo Community Schools task force has recommended a single grades 10 to 12 school in an expanded facility on the campus of Central Middle School and the Career Center. Students in 8th and 9th grades would attend classes at the existing high school buildings, and the three other middle school buildings would serve 6th and 7th graders. Among those who signed the letter were officials from Birch Cabinets, Hawkeye Community College, the Gallagher Blue Dorn Performing Arts Center, and Grow Cedar Valley. They state that merging the schools would serve as a catalyst for positive change within the community and help break down barriers, foster community spirit, and establish a community hub for activities, events, and partnerships. The letter signers suggest that merging East and West on the Central Career Center campus, located along Katoski Drive on the west side of the district, could usher in a growth boom by enticing new businesses to move to the area and allowing for increased economic development. The letter signers also sing the praises of the Career Center, which draws high school students from across Waterloo schools and other districts. In addition to providing community unity, equity, and engagement, they note that it has proven to be an invaluable resource, and students that have access to the WCC earn higher grade point averages and even have higher graduation rates. The school board is expected to take a vote this summer on whether to move forward with the merger. Whitney Fisher has been named the Dean of Students at the Waterloo Career Center, pending approval by the Board of Education. Fisher has been a career coordinator at the center for the past 4 years. Amy Mahey, Career Center Administrator, praised the promotion, citing her innovative leadership and commitment to student success. As Dean of Students, Whitney will play a key role in supporting our students as they explore their talents and passions through the diverse programming offered at the WCC, Mahey said in a news release. The Career Center has seen significant growth in programs and student success since Waterloo Community Schools established it in 2017. A graduate of East High School, Fisher holds a bachelor's degree in education from the University of Northern Iowa with a focus on grades 5 through 12 social science. She has a master's in teaching degree and a professional educator certification from Morningside College. Additionally, Fisher holds a principal and education leadership and evaluator's license from Viterbo University. Fisher would assume her role effective July 1st, following the board approval. The Waterloo Schools Foundation is funding the following projects and experiences, totaling $7,200. Brooklyn Cooper from East High School, Amazing Waterloo Women, Corey Kennis, Waterloo Esports Team, PC Project, Teresa Stiber Mancato, Expo Alternative Learning Center, Waterloo Virtual Academy, PBIS Online Store, West High Journalism Students, the Journalism Education Association National High School Convention. These grants will be funded through private donors and the Waterloo Schools Foundation's Grant Cycle Funds. The Waterloo Schools Foundation's last grant cycle of the year opens on April 1st and closes May 1st, with grant recipients announced mid-May. Questions regarding grant applications and funding can be directed to Hannah Luce at 319-855-3641, or more information can be found at wcsfoundation.org. A Waterloo man won $50,000 from a $5 scratch-off lottery ticket. Austin Smith purchased the ticket at Metromart 2332 Falls Avenue and claimed on Friday the fourth highest prize in the $5 luck scratch game at the Iowa Lottery's Cedar Rapids Regional Office. Luck is a $5 scratch game featuring 8 prizes of $50,000. For more information about the game and the number of prizes still available, go online to ialottery.com. The Salvation Army of Waterloo Cedar Falls is temporarily suspending its free noon community meal beginning Monday due to a lack of a food programs manager. The program has been operating at reduced capacity since February following the resignation of the former food programs manager due to health reasons. Through the past 2 months, the noon meal has been offered twice a week, with staff from other departments stepping into the kitchen. However, the organization is facing a critical staffing shortage across multiple programs and must redirect staff to its emergency shelters and youth program. The weekly perishable goods pantry will continue as normal, open to anyone in need, and frequently provides households with enough resources to make multiple meals. The drive-through pantry operates 11:30 to 12:30 p.m. Thursdays in the agency's parking lot off Logan Avenue. "We never wanted to be in the position of making this tough choice," says Social Ministries Director Grace Fee. "We know how important the meal program is to the community, both for the food and the fellowship. It is our goal to resume this program as quickly as possible once a new food programs manager is secured." The food programs manager position is part-time, 9 a.m. through 2 p.m., Monday through Friday. The position is responsible for operating both the community meal and perishable goods pantry and volunteer oversight for all food programs. Qualified candidates will have experience planning and preparing meals for 100 to 150 people at a time, knowledge of health code standards, and the ability to regularly lift up to 50 pounds. Food manager certification is preferred. The mailings property owners received regarding their potential tax rates may not be what taxpayers actually see on their bills. When the Black Hawk County Board of Supervisors held a public hearing for its proposed tax levy Tuesday, Michelle Widener, the county's finance director, noted how last year's property revaluations were not taken into account for the information received in the mail. A recent law change requires counties to mail a statement to county taxpayers with the numbers for proposed city, school district, and county budgets. However, the actual tax impact will likely be different than the examples in the statement because it did not factor any possible change in assessed value. Many Black Hawk County property owners saw growth in assessed value in 2023, which is not reflected in the calculation. Mailings stated that urban taxpayers would see a nearly 15% drop in county property taxes, while rural taxpayers would see about a 12% decrease. The hearing discussed hypothetical tax askings and tax rates. Another new law states that taxing entities must hold two public hearings for budget hearings to allow for more public comment. After these hearings, the entity cannot go above the proposed tax rates and askings. The county also predicts what different types of property owners will pay for their taxes. This includes urban residential, rural residential, commercial, industrial, and agricultural property classes. These hypothetical residential property taxes are usually based on homes with an assessed value of $100,000. Due to revaluation estimates, Widener factored in an increase. The state's rollbacks also affect what property owners owe annually. In November, the percentage of a residential property's value that can be taxed dropped from 54.65% to 46.34%. Last year, rollbacks were also changed for commercial and industrial properties. These properties will receive the residential rollback amount, 46.34%, for the first $150,000 of value. Once $150,000 is exceeded, the rest will be taxed at 90%. With these numbers, the county is looking at urban residential property owners owing $4 more than last year, or a 1.3% increase, for a total of $309 on a property assessed at $120,500. Rural residential property owners could owe $25 more, or an almost 5% increase, for a total of $530 on properties assessed at $124,000. Commercial property owners would see the biggest spike, an increase of $512, or 23.1%, for a total of $2,725 on a property assessed at $620,000, up from $500,000. Industrial property owners could owe an increase of $145, or 3.1%, for a total of $4,866 on a property assessed at $1.05 million. The only property owners seeing a decrease in their annual bill are agricultural property owners. They could be paying $32 less, or a decrease of 3.8%, for a total of $815, based on a property assessed at $123,000. County taxpayers will have another chance to provide their insight at a public hearing on April 18th. All taxing entities have an April 30th deadline to submit their budgets to the state. Property and utility replacement tax askings are proposed to rise nearly 4.6% in Hawkeye Community College's fiscal year 2025 budget. The revenue would climb from $13.3 million to $13.91 million, supporting an $85.97 million budget beginning July 1st. The challenge, Dan Gillen, Vice President of Administration and Finance, pointed out to the Board of Trustees Tuesday, is Hawkeye is on the lower end when it comes to taxable valuation increases compared with other community colleges, in part because of tax increment financing. The college is proposing a tax rate $1.23 per $1,000 of assessed value, up to 1.9% from 1.21 in the current budget, based on what Gillen says are a lot of estimates, like tuition and state aid. Jay Nardini, board chairperson, pointed out that the college was expecting to pay more in property and casualty insurance, as is being seen across the country. The board set a public hearing on the budget and tax rate for 6 p.m. April 23rd. Community colleges only have the one hearing in their budget process, unlike municipalities and school districts. They are now required to have an additional hearing on the budget for a total of two before April 30th, after House File 718 became law. Gillen also noted the next fiscal year would mark the final payment on a 2015 referendum that voters approved to help the college fund a 10-year facilities plan. The board also approved issuing no more than $35 million in general obligation bonds and beginning to tax for the debt this next fiscal year. Voters passed a bond measure a year ago in support of moving forward with such debt for renovations and expansions to Butler Hall, a new STEM Learning Center in Bremer Hall, and the expansion of the college's law enforcement training program. The resignation of Troy Moran, Dean of Sciences and Health Sciences, effective June 30th, no reason, if any, was immediately available. issuing up to $450,000 in new jobs training certificates for Dignity Apparel and VGM Group in Waterloo. Agreements approved will cover the cost of training for new jobs at the companies. Dignity, a cut and sew garment manufacturing company, and VGM, a post-acute healthcare company, are expecting 30 and 31 new positions, respectively. Dignity's training cost totals $115,000, and VGM's training cost totals $295,000. Hawkeye Community College expects work to get underway on an expansion and renovation of its Regional Transportation Training Center within a month. Now that a general contractor has been picked, the Board of Trustees unanimously voted Tuesday to award a construction contract to Huff Contracting after it placed a low bid of $2.07 million, 11.89% more than the previously estimated cost of $1.85 million. Work is expected to wrap up at 6433 Hammond Avenue by the end of the year for use beginning in 2025, Dan Gillen, Vice President of Administration and Finance, said after the meeting. The new project will be supported by a $1 million grant from Iowa Workforce Development, in addition to dollars from the college's plant fund. Gillen and Mary Pat Moore, Executive Director of Public Relations and Marketing, say the project will allow for more classroom sections and more effective programming to meet an increase in demand. Trustees had no substantive discussion after Gillen shared with them the low bidder and its proposed cost. Six other companies placed bids in addition to the winning contractor based in Waterloo. The others were Cardinal Construction, Don Gardner Construction Company, King Knutson, Matt Construction, Peters Construction, and Woodruff Construction, according to a bid letting document provided by Gillen. The next lowest was Peters at $2.14 million. Three additions will be constructed onto the existing building, according to meeting documents. The north will include new classroom and office space, while the west and south sides of the facility will have a new canopy structure and a new truck maintenance bay with a simulator room, respectively. An existing fuel tank farm will be relocated as well. Not included as part of the work is furniture, fixtures, and equipment, which have an expected cost of $147,000. That provider will be selected outside the boardroom, said Gillen. The Regional Transportation Training Center was built south of the main campus more than a decade ago. The facility provides a variety of short-term training and continuing education, including driver education courses, moped and motorcycle safety courses, commercial driver's license training, school or passenger bus license curriculum, and space for the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy. Certain city facilities in Cedar Falls will be closed for Easter. The City Hall, Tourism and Visitors Bureau, Recycling Center, and Transfer Station will be closed on Friday. The Public Library, Community Center, and Recreation and Fitness Center will be closed on Sunday. The Hearst Center for the Arts will be closed Friday through Sunday. The Visitor Center's brochure lobby is available year-round. The Waterloo Public Library will be closed on Sunday for the Easter holiday. It will reopen with regular hours on Monday at 9 a.m. The Cedar Valley Chamber Music will present a series of free community outreach performances beginning Saturday. At 10:30 a.m., the Children's Outreach Program, Becoming a Musical Superhero, will feature a University of Northern Iowa jazz combo, Watch for Squirrel, at the Cedar Falls Public Library. On April 13th, another children's program, Painting Pictures with Music will be presented by a UNI violin and harp duo, also at the Cedar Falls Public Library. At 7 p.m. April 13th, a free recital, Beyond Debussy, a program exploring the diverse legacy of Claude Debussy, will take place at First Congregational Church in Waterloo. The program will feature Hannah Porter O'Kenna, flute, and Josh Graham, marimba and percussion. On May 17th, a free recital is planned at 7 p.m. at First Congregational Church in Waterloo, a triptych in music. Featured musicians will be Nash Ryder on violin and Sean Botkin on piano. A free recital will be performed at 6 p.m. June 8th at Bar Winslow at the Black Hawk Hotel in Cedar Falls. Ladies' Night will highlight music by women composers featuring musicians Hannah Porter O'Kenna on flute and Emily Phelps on piano. The Cedar Valley Chamber Music Board of Directors recently voted to allocate resources to support faculty and students at the UNI School of Music in Cedar Falls. Spring renewal is at the heart of a Slavic East. The Waterloo Cedar Falls Symphony Orchestra's seasonal performance on Saturday. The concert begins at 7 p.m. in the Catherine Cassidy Gallagher Great Hall at the Gallagher Bluedorn Performing Arts Center located at the University of Northern Iowa campus. Having an Easter weekend concert gives us an opportunity to do a few things a little differently. Spring is a season of renewal and rebirth, and that idea runs through all the music we'll be performing. Not so much in the liturgical sense, but in the nature of music and themes the composers are trying to address, said Jason Weinberger, WCF Symphony conductor and artistic director. A pre-concert talk with Weinberger is planned at 6 p.m. In the spirit of the season, there will be Slavic Easter egg decorations and kits that can be taken home. Musically, a Slavic Easter will highlight music from East and West, in particular Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov's spirited and demanding Russian Easter Overture and Peter Tchaikovsky's passionate and emotional Symphony No. 6, also known as the Pathetique Symphony. It was Tchaikovsky's final completed symphony. The Russian pieces will bookend John Luther Adams' spiritual Midwest soundscape, Become River. The Russian Easter Overture is a really great piece, powerful and interesting in terms of instrumentation and how it uses the orchestra, Weinberger explained. It is the third in a series of popular orchestral pieces written by Rimsky-Korsakov over a one-year period. There will be 100-plus musicians on stage to perform the overture. We'll have 60 symphony players and 40 or so members of the Northern Iowa Youth Orchestra playing side by side with the professional musicians. It's a huge group on stage and quite a way to open the concert, Weinberger said. On April 9th, Weinberger will conduct the annual youth concerts for 4,000 fourth through sixth graders from an 8-county radius at the Gallagher Bluedorn. The free concerts feature the full orchestra in creative and interactive programs. Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back in concert will close the symphony season with concerts at 7 p.m. on April 26th and 27th in the Great Hall. Concerts will feature the entire score by legendary American composer John Williams. Tickets for Saturday's A Slavic Easter can be purchased online at wcfsymphony.org or by visiting the Gallagher Bluedorn's Unitix box office or by calling the Unitix office at 319-273-4849 or the WCF Symphony office at 319-273-3373. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Thursday, March 28, 2024. On IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Dan Malaro, 85, passed away on March 20th. A celebration of life will be held on Saturday, March 30th, from 10 a.m. to noon at Hauser Weischer Funeral Home in Charles City. A funeral mass at Immaculate Conception Church to be held prior to interment at a date to be determined. Dan Malaro was born May 13th in Buell, Minnesota. At the age of 8, the family moved to Fort Dodge, Iowa. He graduated from Fort Dodge Senior High in 1956 and Iowa Central Community College in 1958, and 2 years later from Iowa State Teachers College, now UNI, with a degree in education. On September 5th, 1959, he and Patricia Gray were married at Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Fort Dodge. After teaching for a year in Barnum, Iowa, he left to attend the University of Minnesota, where he earned his first master's degree in the emerging field of guidance counseling. In 1962, Dan and Pat moved to Charles City, and Dan began his 39-year career as a guidance counselor at Charles City Community High School. Later, Dan earned a second master's degree from UNI in psychology. He moved to Cedar Falls in 2022 when additional care was needed. Dan served as a city council person in Charles City for 2 terms. He was a member of the library board and was a secretary for the Noon Kiwanis Club for many years. He was a member of Immaculate Conception Church. He enjoyed hunting and fishing, and he rode on Ragbrite twice. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that donations be made to the Charles City Educational Foundation. Lanice Bacala, 95, of Cedar Falls, passed away on March 23rd in Michigan. Private funeral will be for the extended family at 10 a.m. on Saturday, March 30th, with public visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. the evening prior, both at Dahl Van Hove Schoof Funeral Home. And in some sports news other than basketball, Northern Iowa head swimming and diving coach Nick Lakin has agreed to a 4-year contract extension through the end of the 27-28 season, as announced by the Panther Athletic Department on Tuesday. Under Coach Lakin's leadership, UNI's swimming and diving program has reached new levels not seen before in its history, said Interim Director of Athletics Bob Bowlesby. The Panthers have become one of the Missouri Valley Conference's top programs, raising the bar season after season by developing young women into championship-caliber athletes, both in the pool, in the classroom, and in life. We are grateful to have Coach Lakin continue as the leader of the program in the coming years. Coach Lakin recently completed his 7th season at the helm of the Panthers swimming and diving team in 23-24 and has helped raise the standard of excellence both in and out of the pool. UNI has posted a 57-26-1 record in dual meets in Lakin's first 7 seasons, the most wins by any Panther head coach in program history. Addison McAlreff hammered a pair of home runs as Northern Iowa rolled to a 9-0 5-inning victory over Illinois in a non-conference softball game in Urbana, Illinois on Tuesday. McAlreff blasted a 3-run shot in the first and a solo home run the 5th. She finished 2-for-3 with 4 RBIs. Kate Lappy also went 2-for-4 with a home run and 4 RBIs, while Alexis Papillo scored twice and drove in a run. UNI put the game away with a 5-run third that included Lappy's 3-run shot. Samantha Hare scattered 5 hits and struck out 8 to improve to a 6-4 on the season. The Panthers return to action Friday in a Missouri Valley Conference game at Southern Illinois with a 5 p.m. first pitch. The NCAA once states with legal wagering on sporting events to ban prop bets on college athletes. Sports betting issues are on the rise across the country, with prop bets continuing to threaten the integrity of competition and leading to student athletes getting harassed, NCAA President Charlie Baker said Wednesday in a statement posted on social media. The NCAA has been working with states to deal with these threats, and many are responding by banning college prop bets. Prop bets, short for proposition bets, allow gamblers to wager on statistics a player will accumulate during a game rather than on the final score. Baker's statement came 2 days after the NBA confirmed it opened an investigation into unusual betting patterns surrounding props involving Toronto Raptors forward Jonte Porter. The Raptors said Porter would miss his third consecutive game Wednesday for personal reasons. NBA players and coaches have been outspoken in the last several days about the issue of prop bets and how gamblers react when certain numbers aren't hitting during a game. Indiana Pacers guard Tyrese Haliburton said his social media is filled with complaints, and Cleveland Cavaliers coach J.B. Bickerstaff revealed he received threats from gamblers last season and reported it to the NBA. Earlier this month, U.S. Integrity, a company used by many sports professional sports leagues and college conferences to monitor betting activity, flagged a Temple basketball game for wagering irregularities. The NCAA already has made some progress in pushing for the elimination of prop bets on college athletes. Gaming regulators in Ohio, Vermont, and Maryland have removed prop betting on college athletes online and in sports books. Baker and his staff are reaching out to regulators in other states to encourage similar bans. The NCAA is in the middle of the March Madness basketball tournaments, and for the sixth straight year, the number of states with legal gambling has increased, with North Carolina recently becoming the 38th. The American Gaming Association estimates $2.7 billion will be bet this year on the NCAA men's and women's basketball tournaments through legal sports books. Companies that monitor sports betting for irregularities have warned college sports administrators that prop betting on unpaid athletes elevates the potential risk for a scandal because players can more easily influence their own performance than the overall outcome of a game. The NCAA conducted a survey after last year's basketball tournaments that found 58% of 18 to 22-year-olds are gambling. Baker has said the proliferation of legal sports gambling has increased stress on college athletes. The NCAA has partnered with a data science company called Signify, which also works with the NBA Players Association and WNBA, to identify online threats made to athletes during championship events that are often linked to wagering. In October, the NCAA announced it would be advocating for state legislators to update laws to crack down on harassment of athletes, coaches, and game officials, and to bolster integrity protections. In West Virginia, NCAA officials worked with lawmakers to pass a bill that would allow betting regulators to ban people from wagering in the state, online, or at sportsbooks if they have been found to have harassed players, coaches, or officials online or in person. The bill is awaiting a signature from Governor Jim Justice. San Diego State basketball coach Brian Dutcher said he is concerned about how all the negative feedback affects athletes' mental health. San Diego State guard Desai Lopez said he's received direct messages through social media with complaints about his play. Andy Weikers spends many nights thinking when perhaps he should be sleeping. Weikes, the founder of Da Bin Stores, has been recently giving thought to the community fostered at AA, an old archery club he owned more than a decade ago on Ainsborough Avenue in Waterloo. The idea guy is a fan of the outdoors and has a new business in mind, but is not a gun or archery club. It's a social club for all ages with simulator shooting games where groups play, train, and compete. Trigger Time Sims is in the plaza at 4302 University Avenue, Suite H in Cedar Falls. Weikers hopes to open next month in the storefront furthest to the east in the plaza, formerly home to Your Time Art Studio. This is going to be a place where you can go for 1, 2, 3 hours, laugh, and be active in the summer or winter. And you can get out of the house and have an enjoyable time with other people instead of just being at home and watching TikTok, Weikers said. 3 rooms will be available for up to 4 people at a time to compete using plastic handguns, shotguns, or rifles to shoot at targets popping up on a 10-foot by 10-foot scene projected on the wall. There will be thousands and thousands of different games, said Weikers. Games range from police and military simulations to hunting simulators where people can shoot at just about anything. Deer, pheasants, ducks, pigeons, squirrels, and more. The rooms will contain tables for people to watch the action. The lobby outside will have additional seating and televisions for watching the action. Additionally, retro arcade games will be available along with snacks and beverages, alcoholic and non-alcoholic. What the 1999 Waterloo West High School graduate is offering will complement the many establishments within walking distance, like Pizza Ranch, The Other Place, Goodwill Cedar Falls, and a restaurant preparing to open called Don Gomez Mexican Grilled Chicken. He hopes to open the 2,000 square foot space the first or second weekend in April. He plans a soft opening on April 2nd. He plans to let people try out a simulator during the Impact Outdoors event at 5 p.m. Saturday in Electric Park Ballroom. The simulators were developed by Laser Shot of Stafford, Texas. One will be available to rent for corporate events, basement sessions, bachelor or bachelorette parties, or other functions. Weikers anticipates hosting social events like men's and ladies' nights, tournaments, and leagues. The facility will also be available to rent, he said. Memberships and reservation slots will also be available. Weikers has named Michaela Cisneros as Trigger Time's manager. Hours are tentatively set for 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sunday, 5 to 9 p.m. Tuesday and Wednesday, and 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. The facility will be closed on Monday. Learn more at TriggerTimeSims.com. Ruth Sukow was Iowa's answer to Willa Cather. Both women made their names as American writers. Cather wrote about life on Nebraska's Great Plains, while Sukow, who was a longtime resident of Cedar Falls, wrote about rural Iowa. Surprisingly, the Iowa-born Sukow is not as widely recognized as Cather, although she published 9 novels and 43 short stories. Sukow's first novel, Country People, was published in 1924. Authors Jim O'Loughlin and Julie Husband hope to generate renewed interest in Sukow's achievement with a centenary edition of the poignant novel and a new critical introduction by the University of Northern Iowa English professors. The novel is available at area bookstores and at online booksellers. Country People follows 4 generations of the Cather Henrys, an Iowa German American settler family from the 1870s to the early 1920s. The husband and wife duo of O'Loughlin and Husband wrote the superb introduction together. It provides today's readers with everything they need to know to appreciate the novel: its publishing history, the changing critical response over 100 years, and rich insights into Sukow's artistry, said Barbara Lounsbury, president of the Ruth Sukow Memorial Association and UNI professor emeritus. In the 1920s, H.L. Mencken wrote, "I regard Ruth Sukow as the most promising young writer of fiction, man or woman, now visibly at work in America." Sukow captured the lives, passions, and struggles of ordinary people in their small towns and farms, Lounsbury explained. Her works include Iowa Interiors, short stories, and the novels Odyssey of a Nice Girl, The Folks, a Literary Guild selection and bestseller in 1934, A Part of the Institution, based on Grinnell College, and The John Wood Case, which draws on an actual Northwest Iowa embezzlement tragedy. In 1892, Sukow was born in Howerton on the Big Sioux River in northwestern Iowa. The daughter of a Congregational minister, she had lived in 12 Iowa towns, including Cedar Falls, when she married Ferner Nunn of Cedar Falls in 1929. Nunn founded the first Cedar Falls Arts Association and Art Gallery in the early 1940s. Her gravesite is in Greenwood Cemetery in Cedar Falls. The public can visit her home in Howerton, as well as the Ruth Sukow Memorial Library and Ruth Sukow Park and Shelter in Earlville. O'Loughlin and Husband, who are members of the Sukow Association, spent a year on the project, beginning with reading the writer's letters. The novel, often described as a chronicle, begins with August and Emma, a hard-working, sensible, and thrifty couple establishing a farm in Iowa, rearing six children and living their lives. O'Loughlin had the idea to reproduce the Grant Wood painting Young Corn on the cover for the reissue. Sukow and Wood became friends in the 1930s and corresponded. Lounsbury describes it as a perfect cover for country people. The image not only captures the young Iowa the Cater Henrys found in the 1800s, but Ferner Nunn's sister, the watercolorist Marjorie Nunn, studied with Grant Wood in Stone City in the 1930s. So the cover is suitable in multiple ways, she said. On September 14th, a free public centennial celebration of the novel will take place at the Hearst Center for the Arts, 304 West Searley Boulevard. Plans are for a harvest picnic at noon using foods mentioned in the novel. At 1 p.m., Iowa writer and former poet laureate Mary Swander will give the keynote address. Any Iowa farmers interested in being part of the panel can contact Lounsbury at lounsbury@gmail.com. Country People can be ordered directly from the publisher with free shipping at finalthursdaypress.com. It is available from area bookstores and online booksellers. Egg prices are at near historic highs in many parts of the world as the spring holidays approach, reflecting a market scrambled by disease, high demand, and growing costs for farmers. It's the second year in a row consumers have faced sticker shock ahead of Easter and Passover, both occasions in which eggs play prominent roles. While global prices are lower than they were at this time last year, they remain elevated, said Nan Dirk Mulder, a senior global specialist with Dutch financial firm Rabobank's Rabo Research Food and Agribusiness Division. Mulder doesn't expect them to return to 2021 levels. In the United States, the average price of a dozen eggs was $2.99 in February, down from $4.21 last year, according to government data. Still, that's significantly more than the $1.59 per dozen consumers were paying in February of 2021. In Europe, egg prices are 10 to 15% lower than last year, but still about double what they were in 2021, Mulder said. One major culprit is avian flu. Outbreaks of the deadly respiratory disease were reported in Europe, Africa, and Asia in 2020 and spread to North America in 2021. In 2022 alone, more than 131 million poultry worldwide died or were culled on affected farms, according to the World Health Organization. Outbreaks are continuing. In December, the U.S. confirmed cases in 45 commercial flocks and 33 backyard flocks, affecting 11.4 million birds, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Even when avian flu dissipates, it can take a long time for the egg market to settle. It takes a farm 3 to 6 months to replenish a flock, so during that time, egg supplies are low and prices rise, said Emily Metz, president of the American Egg Board, a marketing organization. If farms restock with too many chickens, it can drive prices down. That's what happened in the U.S. last summer when egg prices plunged to $2 per dozen, and profits can be hard for farmers to come by during periods of inflation. Chicken feed represents up to 70% of a farmer's costs, and feed prices doubled between 2020 and 2022, Mulder said. Weather, COVID-related disruptions, and the war in Ukraine, which drove up the price of wheat and other crops, were all contributors. Government regulations also play a part in lifting egg prices. Multiple states, including California and Massachusetts, have passed cage bans for egg-laying hens since 2018. This year, bans are set to take effect in Washington, Oregon, and Michigan. Meet author Jocelyn Hickey Johnson at the Grout Museum beginning at 1 p.m. Saturday. She will be signing copies of her new book, Susie Clark, The Bravest Girl You've Ever Seen. Susan Clark was 13 when she became the first black student in the U.S. to integrate a public school through Iowa court order in 1868. The event is free. Copies of the book will be sold for $14.99 in the museum store. Also on Saturday, the Cedar Valley Fashion, Art, and Culture Expo is from 7 to 11:30 p.m. at the Waterloo Convention Center. Doors open at 6. The 10th annual event is designed to ignite the spirit of African American culture in the heart of the Cedar Valley. This year's theme for designers is Denim Disasters. Dayron Thai DJ is the expo's official DJ. Cedric returns for this year's show among the evening's performances. Host is Frank Spencer. Tickets are $20 in advance at Eventbrite. Limited general admission tickets may be available at the door. Former Steppenwolf vocalist Danny Wilde will perform a solo show Saturday from 8:30 to 11:30 p.m. at Screaming Eagle American Bar and Grill in Waterloo. Wilde, director from Las Vegas, is a member of the award-winning show Raiding the Rock Vault and former singer with the legendary rock band Steppenwolf. Admission is free. Fire and Ice Fossils opens Tuesday at 10 a.m. at the Grout Museum of History and Science. Visitors will be able to view a wide variety of fossils from the Grout Museum District's own collection through September 7th. Museum hours are Tuesday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Admission is $15 for adults, $8 for veterans and children 4 to 13. Museum members are free of charge. The exhibit sets the stage for the upcoming Dinosaurs, Land of Fire and Ice exhibit opening May 18th at the Blue Dorn Science Imaginarium. Performers, aerialists, and animal acts will be featured at the Cardin International Circus at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday at the Hippodrome on the National Cattle Congress grounds. It's the biggest circus in the country and filled with family fun. The circus is committed to exceptional care and ethical treatment for all of their animals. Tickets are available at tickets.spectacularcircus.com or at the gate. And we end today's reading with a correction. The story, CF School Board sets hearing on 1.85% hike in task askings in Tuesday's Courier, incorrectly stated the current and proposed property tax for the Cedar Falls Community School District. The rate is currently $15.27 per $1,000 of taxable valuation and would drop to $14.79 per $1,000 of taxable valuation under the proposal. If you are aware of a statement in a Courier story that requires clarification or correction, let us know as soon as possible. Call 291-1439. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Thursday, March 28, 2024. I'm your reader, Grace Barter. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.